Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its labourers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. It is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the clouds of war, it is humanity hanging on a cross of iron. And that was said by Dwight D. Eisenhower in a speech that he gave to the American Society of Newspaper Editors on the 16th of April, 1953. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. And it's a pleasure to be back here again, ladies and gentlemen, after my long hiatus from radio. Well, I did do one show last week, but it was more of a specialised special event type show. And so I'm really kind of considering this to be my first real show back on air. I've been off gallivanting all over the place, following synchronicities around the world. And those of you who kind of participated in your own way by following the blog that I had on the website, I'm sure you understand what I'm saying. And there's so many stories that I could tell you about things that happened on the trip that it's difficult to know really where to begin, were I to go down that path. Suffice to say, it was a very, very interesting trip, though, and I was able to make a lot of connections along the way, which was really good. But it got to a stage where I kind of had to come home and just regroup because there was so much information coming in from so many different perspectives that I just had a lot of stuff to process. When I got home, I was still wondering what had it all been about, really. I mean, there was so much information that had come in, but what was the real purpose of it all? And then I got contacted by an old friend and asked to come and participate in a talk in North Queensland at a festival called Entheon Gaia. And it was by making that trip to Cairns that suddenly a lot of things kind of fell together and the purpose of the whole previous trip became apparent, and a huge plan developed in my head while I was there, which I'm hoping to implement next year. So that's something that I'll have to keep you posted on a little bit later once I've formulated how I'm going to go about it all. It's quite complicated. It involves a lot of people. I did have a plan to go back to Peru next year and make a documentary about shamanism, but it's kind of morphed into something else entirely that is going to encompass a lot more than just going to Peru. And it's going to be something that people can participate in, either in the places that we happen to be visiting, or they can also join us online for live chats and video logs and live streams and stuff like this that we want to organise through a website. So as I said, there's a few people involved in this, and we want to try to be able to get participation from everybody, see how much of the world we can link up, basically, is what the plan is for next year. And it was kind of a download that happened to me while I was in Cairns, so that was quite remarkable. And the even more remarkable thing about it is the synchronistic way in which it all happened. And then as soon as I got home and started discussing it with someone, suddenly we're getting calls from people overseas at particular moments, just when someone happens to be visiting me. Someone will call from overseas who said they could feel something was going on and they felt they had to ring us. And some of the people that I've met recently, and the way things have just all been falling into place, it seems to be that it's something that absolutely wants to happen. And that's something that should hopefully be starting around about February next year. The project will be called Full Circle, and the URL of the website that is set up to deal with the project will be fullcirclenow.net. As I mentioned on the show last week, there's nothing actually there at that URL at the moment, but there will be something there soon. But once I have something a little bit more concrete to tell you, I will tell you. I just thought I would like to share that with you so that you would know that what I was doing while I was gallivanting about the place was actually doing a lot of listening rather than doing a lot of talking, and that a concrete plan seems to have formulated out of the whole thing. I'm really hoping to see a global link-up event happen next year. And here we are, folks. It's December 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar, the time that we've been waiting for so long. So I wonder what's going to happen. We've got people saying that we're going to have some type of energy field come from the sun, some huge pulse, some energy wave. We've had people suggesting there's going to be cataclysms. We've had people suggesting it's going to be Planet X. We've had all sorts of things suggested by all sorts of people. We've had the suggestion that it's simply a tipping point. So I wonder what's going to happen. Very interesting time to be alive, folks. Very interesting time. I found it interesting that last year, at this time last year, people were actually in fear of the December 21st, 2012 event that was coming up the following year. But now here we are less than 1 month away from the event, and no one seems to be talking about it or paying it much mind at all. It's a very interesting dichotomy. I mean, this is an event that people have been waiting for quite literally for decades. And now that it's right here on our doorstep, the general population and the mainstream media seem to have gone pretty silent about the whole thing. But time will tell, and we don't have to wait long, folks. A matter of 2 or 3 weeks and all will be revealed. Personally, I think it will probably be a rather ordinary day, the same as any other day. I think it may signify a tipping point in consciousness. It may perhaps be the beginning of an era of change. I know there is certainly a lot of change in the air, and I'm certainly going to help bring about as much of that change as I can with the Full Circle mission that I intend to embark on early in the new year. I think shift does happen, folks, but it is something that you have to participate in. I think that the change that we're looking for in our society and in the planet in general is something that is very much able to happen, but again, it requires our participation in order to make it happen. I fully believe that if people change their energetic state and apply it to the world around them, then that is really all they need to do to affect positive change in the world. And I think we're seeing a lot of that now, so it will be very interesting to see how all of this pans out. I'm hoping that by this time next year anyway, or even earlier, possibly by July or August next year, that we've seen some major changes. And I'm really hoping we're going to have enough participation from the people in the world to bring these changes about. But as I said, folks, time will tell. Suffice to say that it certainly is a very, very interesting time to be alive. There is no denying that. Now, I have received numerous requests to talk about my trip and the experience that I had in Peru, and I will touch on that a little bit later in the show. But for now, just to touch on global events for just a little bit. And folks, after I've spoken about this, I'll stop talking about Israel. I'll leave it for a while. It's just sort of been a bit of a focus of mine since returning from Gaza. I've been sort of noticing what goes on over there a lot more due to the personal connection that I developed with a lot of the people in Gaza while I was there. So yes, I will stop focusing on Israel after I've said my piece here. But I must say that it was very interesting to see the UN vote favouring recognition for Palestine the other day. This, of course, has both good and bad implications. It could be good if the Palestinian people use it in order to mount legal challenges against the incredibly illegal and unethical and apartheid, dare I say, bordering on genocidal activities of Israel regarding Palestine and the occupied territories. And yes, it could be a good thing if they use it to mount a legal challenge against these activities, but if they are simply going to use it to recognise a two-state solution and allow things to remain the way they are according to the 1967 boundaries, which, I mean, of course, that isn't the way they are. I mean, Israel would have to roll back its illegal activity in the West Bank and East Jerusalem in order to go back to the 1967 borders, which were not legal borders anyway. But if the Palestinian people do recognise a two-state solution and they go to the 1967 borders, then basically that will be the end of Palestine. So the vote is both good and bad, depending on how Palestine uses their newly found status in the international community. Personally, I think the whole thing needs to be rolled back. I think Israel is an illegitimate state and shouldn't actually exist. I think that the land that was known as Israel, that existed within Palestine, that was traditionally occupied by the Jews, should remain the way it was, and the Jews should occupy that land the way they always have for as long as we can remember, until the West got involved. That's what I think we should do. Personally, I don't think the two-state solution is possible of ever working, because the two-state solution simply does not take into account the approximately 5 million dispossessed Palestinians who have had their land stolen from them and are unable to return to their lands. So I don't think the two-state solution can possibly work. And looking at it realistically, it's a solution that Israel will not be happy with either. Israel would like a one-state solution, only they would like the state to be Israel. Israel will not be happy, in fact, until all the Palestinian people have been completely dispossessed. In fact, it can be seen very clearly simply by observing the actions of Israel that Israel will never allow a two-state solution to continue. And it's very obvious to see how much Israel is against any recognition for the Palestinian people at all, simply by the way they have announced that they're going to destroy more homes and build another 3,000 illegal housing units on Palestinian land to house the Jewish people. I mean, this is just typical of Israel, folks. And bear in mind, of course, as I said last week on the show, that building structures and moving citizens onto occupied territories is, in fact, a war crime. Of course, Israel doesn't worry about this. Israel can simply chalk this war crime up with all the other war crimes that Israel perpetrates on a daily basis. And they just don't really seem to care because, of course, they believe themselves to be above the law as it applies to the rest of the world, because they are God's chosen people, after all. Well, that seems to be the mentality of the psychopathic, sociopathic, criminal scumbags who are actually in charge of the state of Israel. And folks, if you think that these people are not sociopathic and psychopathic and racist, and that they do actually care about peace, and they do actually care about unity, and they do actually support a two-state solution, well, I'd just like to point you to another instance that has occurred since the UN vote to recognise Palestine. And this is the decision by the Israeli finance minister to suspend payment and suspend the transfer of any funds collected on behalf of the Palestinian Authority this month. Of course, one may question why it is Israel who is collecting the taxes for Palestine to begin with, but that's a black hole that we probably don't wish to discuss. But suffice to say that this move has followed the approval of the 3,000 new illegal housing units. And since the vote, the finance minister said, and I quote, "I have no intention of transferring tax payments to the Palestinian Authority this month. I plan to use them to offset the Palestinian debt to the Israel Electric Corporation." And of course, it's also good to understand that the reason that Palestine would even have a debt to the Israel Electric Corporation is because of the treatment meted out to the Palestinian people from Israel, which prevents them from having their own electrical plants functioning to full capacity, most especially in Gaza, where the power is cut from 8 to 16 hours a day, due to the inability of the Gazan electrical plant to meet the everyday demands required by a normal population, operating within the parameters of a normally functioning society. And this is because it's in a state of disrepair, and the people within Gaza are unable to get the parts they need to repair the power station, of course, because Israel will not allow these parts to be brought into the country, under the pretext that these parts may be used for terrorism. And of course, by preventing these parts from entering Gaza, what they do is they actually carry out an act of psychological terrorism against the Palestinian people, and they continue this psychological terrorism against them at every opportunity and in every way they can find to do so. But getting back to this article on the plan of Israel to withhold the tax money from the Palestinian Authority, they also mentioned the 3,000 illegal housing units that they intend to build there. And at the start of the weekly cabinet meeting, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu explained what he called Jerusalem's initial reaction to the United Nations General Assembly resolution recognizing Palestine as a non-member state with a quote from the past. And this is what he used to justify his actions, folks. Get this. What he said was, "The attack on Zionism and the state of Israel forces us to reinforce and speed up the implementation of the settlement plans in all the areas the government has decided to settle in. These are not my words, he said, but the words of the government of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin in 1975, following the UN resolution that compared Zionism to racism. So do you see what's going on here, folks? They're saying they're going to expand things because someone has been claiming that Zionism is racism and that people are attacking Zionism. But folks, Zionism is racism, and it's good that people speak out against it because Zionism is like a cancer in the mind of modern society. And Netanyahu also clarified, mind you, that Israel will, I quote, continue to build in Jerusalem in all the places of the state of Israel's map of strategic interests. And he said that the Palestinian Authority's unilateral move at the UN is a blatant violation of agreements. Get this, Israel is claiming that someone broke agreements that it made with them, and therefore the Israeli government rejects the UN General Assembly. Now, look, you've got to understand what was being said here, folks. What he said was they're going to continue to build anywhere on Israel's map of strategic interests. But what could be strategic about building in the West Bank and in Jerusalem? I mean, does it present some sort of military option? No, it doesn't. But the strategy is to eliminate the Palestinian people from existence, to squeeze them out of their own country until there are no Palestinians left. So that's what Israel's strategic interests are. Their strategic interests are eliminating every single Palestinian from the land of Palestine. That's what they're saying here. And he dares to say that what the Palestinian Authority did by asking to please be recognized as human beings and stop dropping bombs on us, he said that the Palestinians' unilateral move at the UN is a blatant violation of agreements, and therefore Israel rejects the resolution. But all Israel has done since it was formed was break agreements. Israel has broken more UN resolutions than any other country on earth. Israel signed an agreement that it would pull out of the territories it currently occupies in the West Bank and Jerusalem and go back to the 1967 boundaries. It signed that back in the late 70s, and it broke that agreement. So, I mean, it's not even in Israel. Where it's building these houses is not even Israel. It's Palestine, according to an agreement signed by Israel. And bear in mind that that was an agreement that said they would go back to the 1967 boundaries, which are themselves illegal boundaries and do not serve anybody's interest at all except the interest of Zionism. The real boundaries, if Israel is to exist at all, must and can only be the 1948 UN petition. Everything that's happened since then has been illegal, but bear in mind, of course, that one must also question the legality of the 1948 boundaries. I mean, that was the result of an agreement made in England and later decided on by the United Nations. It didn't really have much to do with the people in the Middle East and certainly didn't have anything to do with the people in Palestine. So, I mean, Israel claiming that it's doing something because someone broke agreements is really the act of like a spoilt child who does nothing but keep all his toys to himself. I mean, the mentality of these people, folks, I mean, I'm really surprised that these people are able to even get through a normal day without help. With the cloudiness of vision and the utter disdain for humankind that they all seem to possess, it's almost like something genetic with these people, I'm not sure. But it doesn't make much sense at all. And, I mean, nothing Benjamin Netanyahu says makes sense. The man's just a terrorist. I can't believe that he's still in power. And I can't believe that so many people within Israel support the actions of this insane, power-crazed, blood-lusting, genocidal maniac as the man that he is. And that he has displayed himself to be with such impeccable clarity on so many occasions in the past. And in fact, a clear example of this attitude by Benjamin Netanyahu would be in one of his statements that he made during this speech, in which he said that he would like to clarify once again that there will be no Palestinian state without an agreement guaranteeing the security of Israel's citizen, and there will be no Palestinian state before the state of Israel is recognized as a Jewish people's state, and there will be no Palestinian state before the Palestinians declare the end of the conflict. And what he's saying with that statement is that we're just going to keep on killing Palestinians, we're going to keep on stealing their land until the illegitimate state of Israel is recognized, and there will be no peace until the Palestinians declare that they will not resist our gradual theft of their land and the dispossession of their people once and for all. What Benjamin Netanyahu did with that single sentence was present the mindset of a pure sociopath. And he closed the statement by saying he was against the bid because he will not agree to have Judea and Samaria region turned into an Iranian terror base like what happened in the territories evacuated in Gaza. My friends, Gaza is not a terror base. Gaza is a group of people, a group of beautiful civilian people who are being slowly starved to death and exterminated and kept in a prison camp simply because they are Palestinians who will not bow to Zionist Israel. That's all that's going on there. And as I said on the show last week, I think these actions are the final nail in the coffin of what was once Israel. I don't see how it can survive this type of blatant disregard for human life, this blatant disregard for peace, this blatant disregard for anything to do with humanity at all. As far as the Zionist government of Israel is concerned, the only thing that's good for the world and the people in Palestine and the people within Israel who stand against this as well is what the Zionist government of Israel says is good. And that's what the world's going to have to do, because if the world doesn't do that, then we may exercise the Samson option and take down the rest of the world with us if our existence is threatened. You see what they're doing here, folks. They're just imposing their will upon these people, and they're saying, if you try to stop us, we'll take down the rest of the world. You can't stop Israel. You can't put us out of existence. We're going to be here. We're going to steal as much land as we can. And if you try to stop us, we'll take the rest of the world down with us. This is, unfortunately, the mentality of the Zionist government of Israel. And that's why the world really does need to pay attention. And that's all I wish to say about Israel for a while, folks. So thank you for bearing with me and letting me get that off my chest. And I do this and I say the things that I've said like this because going to Gaza has really opened my eyes to the plight of the people who live there. And I made a real connection to some of those people, and the very sad part about it for me is that these people do not have a voice. And as much as I don't wish to focus on Israel and on Gaza on these radio shows, I feel that I owe it to the people who live there to have said what I said on the show today and to have said what I said last week. I'm sure that if you'd gone there yourself and had met these people, or if you had friends of yours who were in a state of hardship and oppression and you had a platform with which to speak out about this in hope that you may bring an end to it, well, I'm sure you would do the same. And so that's why I've said the things I have, and don't think that the focus of this show is going to be one that focuses on the Middle Eastern situation. I'm just still getting it off my chest, folks. I still have a lot of stuff to release about that, and I guess you're the platform that I'm using to do it. But we're all human, my friends, and sometimes, you know, when we become deeply troubled, sometimes it's good to talk about it with other friends. And I consider all of you out there to be my friends. The many supportive emails that you've sent me, the many supportive emails I got during my trip, and the people that have contributed to the website and helped me out when I've been in need, all the things that you've done to support my research and to help the message get out to the world and to help bring about some positive change in the world. I mean, none of it could have been accomplished without you, and so I do consider all of you to be my friends. And so I guess that's why I feel comfortable talking about these things to you. Like I said, folks, sometimes I just have to get things off my chest, and this really is the best platform to do it. And that might seem like a strange thing to say, considering I'm like talking to the airwaves and there could be anybody out there listening to this, even someone that I don't know. But that's okay, because I consider all of you to be my friends anyway. The people that I don't know are simply friends that I haven't met yet. That's how I feel about it. And even when I speak out about Israel the way I do, it's the entity of Israel. It's not the Israeli people. I mean, there are a lot of people in there that seem to support the actions of the Israeli government, but they do so because they're misinformed. They don't see the bigger picture. They're kept in as much of a bubble as anybody else is these days. and probably even more so within Israel. As I mentioned on the show last week, the tiered matrix system of control that's imposed upon the people of the West Bank that they are so aware of, much of the general population of Israel have no idea that this control mechanism even exists for the Palestinian people. They just see the Palestinian people complaining all the time, so they think these people are just hard to get along with and they don't want peace because they're always complaining, and they don't see what they have to complain about because, as far as they know, Israel actually gives them aid and things because they're too lost and alone and untogether to be able to look after themselves. They don't understand what the Palestinian people are put through, and that the state that they are in is created for them to be in by Israel. And it's all done on purpose, and it's all done by design. It's all created to bring about instability and to dispossess these people. I mean, see, not only will the situation in Israel eventually dispossess the entire race of the Palestinian people, but it will also create a permanent mechanism for instability within the Middle East. Here you've got this Zionist Rothschild-controlled terrorist entity that exists within the center of all of this area of Muslim nation. And it isn't that the nations are run by the religion, it just means that the governments are predominantly Muslim. It's the same in Christian countries. We don't say this is wrong because the government is predominantly Christian, because Muslims and Jews and all other religions still exist within these countries, the same as they do in Muslim countries. You find Christians there in Iran, they're quite happy. There were Christians and Jews always existing in Palestine, they were quite happy. I mean, that's the way it works. The only people that won't allow this is the state of Israel. So you can see why it's all been done. But there I go back on that topic again. I seem to have a one-track mind at the moment, folks, so please accept my apologies for that. It's just, it's profound to see the effect that the visit to Gaza has had upon me. But look, I think it's break time here now, so I'll leave it there for now. And we'll come back after the break and I'll talk a little bit about the experience in Peru, and try to answer some of the questions that people have asked me in the emails that they've sent. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, touching on the trip to Peru in August last year, where I went and did ceremony at a place called Tierra Vida, what I experienced there was a really profound moment. And of course, there were profound moments throughout all the ceremonies that I did, but there was this one particular ceremony there that was a very profound moment. And bear in mind that this was my experience. I mean, it wasn't something that may happen to you. I mean, if you go there and you do what I did, there's no telling that what happened to me is going to happen to you. Because during these ceremonies, it's always a very personal experience and no two ceremonies are the same. But what I experienced was an incredibly deep connection to the mother, to the earth mother, to the spirit of the earth in this one particular ceremony. And what it did for me was it showed me what the connection is supposed to be, what it's like to have higher senses online, instincts and things like this, what it's like to be able to communicate with reality. It helped me understand that that's what instincts are in animals. The ability to be able to read the earth and know when a weather change is coming, or know when an earthquake or a tsunami is coming, and to be able to leave the area the way you'll find that animals do. Animals always go strange. You know, if you want to see if something weird's going to happen, just watch the birds and watch the animals and see what they do. And when they start acting strange, you know that something strange is about to happen, because they can read the energy field around them. They do this through what we call instincts. But what they really are higher senses. And what I experienced in Peru was a coming online of those higher senses. And I experienced a real connection with the earth. And I saw just what we're capable of and what we're capable of being and what we should be if we were good custodians of this planet and good shepherds of this planet. And acting as shepherds of the life on this planet, I believe, is our role. Because we're the only species on the planet that possesses both high intelligence and manual dexterity. Therefore, it is fitting that it is us who should be the custodians of the planet, hence all the legends saying that we are. Even in the Christian Bible, it says that God created man and gave man dominion over the earth. So it always comes back to us being the custodians of this planet, and that's what I experienced when I was in Peru. And when I experienced this, and the connection that I got to the Earth Mother and the connection that I got to nature, which was absolutely profound, when I experienced this, I began to see what DMT actually is, that it is actually an interface that you use to communicate with reality. It's actually a doorway to higher senses. I mean, I already intuitively knew this anyway, but during ceremony, I actually experienced it. I actually experienced the fact that the knowledge was true. But more importantly, what I began to see was why the knowledge of the plants, why paganism and shamanism and pantheism and what the church termed as witchcraft, which was essentially the knowledge of the plants, why this was deemed to be such a threat to the powers that be, why it was deemed to be such a threat to the Vatican system, why it was such a threat to the Christian legal system that was being put in place. And I began to see why such an incredible effort was undertaken by the church in order to stamp out these traditions, to stamp out any traditional medicines, to stamp out any shamanistic knowledge. This is why they went and decimated all of these indigenous cultures. It wasn't because they wanted to just take the country over and impose an economic system. It's because they wanted to stamp out shamanistic traditions, the knowledge of the plants and the connection to the earth that we're supposed to have. And it began to be clear to me during ceremony and during the rest of my trip around the place that even if we were to bring down the system, even if we were to have mass arrests, as people suggest we are going to have, which I would find to be highly doubtful, if any of this stuff was to happen, what's going to happen is we're still going to put together another system. We're still going to put together something inorganic that we really don't need, when all we really need to do is to rein this system in and use the mechanisms that have been put in place to toxify us and disconnect us, to detoxify us and to reconnect us. And we can do that within the parameters of the current system. We simply have to take control of the current system, and all we have to do this is to realize what our relationship with government is. And here I go back on the same thing that I always talk about, how what government are simply a group of public trustees, because ultimately it is us, it is humankind, it is mankind that are the shepherds, that are the culture, that are the human race. We make up this race together, all completely equal. We have no need of leaders. What we have a need for is, due to the structure of our society, we have a need for administrators to manage this society for us. But we need to change the direction in which this society is moving, change the direction the ship of state is sailing, and put it back on track so that we can reconnect ourselves. Because it isn't until we reconnect to our higher senses and reconnect to nature and reconnect to the power of what we could actually be that we're going to be able to implement any real change. Anything other than that is simply going to be pulling down one system and putting up another one. And I know it's very difficult for people to believe that we could live in a world without a system and without commerce. But we can do it if we are connected to nature or reconnected to nature. Many people may think this is hippie mumbo jumbo. And it doesn't really matter if people think that, because all we have to do is rein the society in, put our trustees back into the correct position that they are supposed to be in, and get all of the toxins out of our environment, get rid of all the heavy metals, all the fluoride, all the food additives, all the GMO crops, all the stuff that they're polluting us with, get rid of all this stuff, and you'll find that in a matter of two or three generations, maybe even less than then, these people who didn't believe they could be connected to the planet and could be connected to nature will find that they are connected just by default, simply because of the detoxification that their body has undergone. And they don't even have to do this themselves. We can do it simply by removing all the toxins from the environment. People don't have to go on any particular dietary regime. They can still eat what they eat. But if what they are eating, doesn't matter if it comes from a packet in the supermarket, if it's healthy, if it's free of GMO, if it's free of environmental toxins, if it's free of heavy metals and dioxins, if the fluoride's out of the water and the electromagnetic radiation is brought under control, and perhaps we start using frequencies that aren't so damaging to the organism, then you'll find that these people will simply detoxify by default. So there's no reason for any real stand to be mounted or any battle to be mounted or any revolution to be waged. All one has to do is realize the power of themselves and realize what their relationship with government is. That's how we fix the whole thing, folks. And that's what I saw in my connection in Peru, that whole download of how incredibly simple it would be to fix this problem. All we have to do is detoxify ourselves, and all we have to do to achieve that is put government back in their correct position within the social hierarchy. And I know that that probably sounds reasonably political for a ceremonial experience, but, well, that's what I got in the download. That's what I got in the experience of that connection with nature and that connection to the earth, was the solution to how to free ourselves from this system and reestablish that connection. Because what happened to me, folks, it was like the jungle caressed my soul. I don't know how else to put it, really. It was like the entire Amazon jungle, the entire region that I was in, conveyed its entire emotional journey to me. That's the only way I can really explain it. It was a remarkable experience. And again, I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen to you if you go and do the same ceremony and do what I did. But I went in there with questions of how I can take what I do to the next level. How can I bring about some real change? And I got messages about things within myself that I need to change, the things that may lurk deep within that I have yet to deal with. But I also got the answer that I needed, in as much as I was shown the connection that I could have to the earth, and I'm supposed to have to the earth. And I was given confirmation that what I've been saying about trust and what I've been saying about the real power of humankind is absolutely real. So it was a remarkable experience, and I'm extremely glad that I had the experience. I've been asked by people, why have I put so much emphasis on Peru? There's someone who's contacted me on Skype. I haven't had time to answer because every time he contacts me, I'm kind of busy. But he's questioned me on why have I felt this connection in Peru? Why do I not believe the same connection could be found in Australia? And my answer to that is that it probably can. It's just that where I received this information was in the jungles of Peru. I think a lot of it was because of the connection that I've had to that place ever since I was a child. One of the most fascinating pictures in my life had always been images of Machu Picchu, as far back as I can remember. When I was 4 or 5, I used to be fascinated by images of this place. But more than that, it just happens to be where I was when I got this connection, when I got this download. But I think that you would probably experience it everywhere. I think that it does exist everywhere, all over the earth. I don't think you have to be in a particular area. But the essential thing, of course, as well, is the trigger for me was the song that the shaman was singing. The song that the shaman was singing was what allowed access to these realms, and that may sound strange, but I can't imagine ever going to that realm and experiencing the things that I experienced and getting the connection and the communication that I had were it not for the song of the shaman that night. So for me, that was a really big part of it, and I think that Peru is simply the place I had to go to receive the message that I was supposed to receive. And I'm not putting any one country above any other country and claiming one experience in one country is any more valid than one experience in another country. Things simply happen for a reason, and that was how it all happened for me. Something else that I also got from the experience was a real need to save the Amazon jungle and to save these traditions, to protect these traditions. Because these traditions only really seem to still exist in the upper reaches of the Amazon. And I think that if we lose these connections, then we will never get them back. It will simply never have a means of finding its way back into our consciousness. Especially with the rate we are destroying our environment, you'll find that many of the plants that are used to conduct these ceremonies probably won't exist anymore. And even if they do exist, then the knowledge of how to use them and how to mix them will be forgotten. I think it's incredibly important that we preserve this shamanistic tradition. And as I mentioned before, the incredible effort that the Vatican went to stamp out these traditions is a very good indication of the importance of preserving them. because I believe that the church went to such an extraordinary effort to remove these traditions from our knowledge because they pose the one real threat to this system. They represent the one true way that we can extricate ourselves from this system, the one true way we can re-establish our connection with Mother Earth. I think that is why even talking about these traditions and practicing any form of plant medicine or what was termed paganism was punishable by death for so long, because it was the one threat that this system faces. As I said earlier, with our current disconnected left brain mindset, were we to pull down the system that we currently have and simply replace it with another one, it's just going to end up in the same position. It's going to end up with someone else in control. It's going to end up with a regimented population. It's going to end up with a loss of rights. It's going to end up with a loss of personal power. That's what any system is destined to do. That's what it has to do, just by default. And ultimately, we don't even need a system. What we need is to reconnect with ourselves, reconnect with our higher selves, reconnect with the earth that we live upon. That really is the most important thing for us to do. That's what I think this period in history is all about, folks. I think this time in history is when we do reconnect. I think it's all going just as it should. I think we're well on the way to this happening. The whole system of control that's been put in place around us is falling apart. Even the instability mechanism that's been put in place in the Middle East in order to start World War III, namely the State of Israel, is falling apart. It's all becoming so blatantly obvious to everybody how corrupt the system is. All the staged wars all through Northern Africa and all through the Middle East, everybody is seeing how contrived all of this is. Everybody in Western society is finding themselves in a state of hardship. It's becoming apparent how corrupt the monetary system is. Everyone's seen how corrupt the bankers are, how they all ran off with the money as soon as the system started to fail. So even through the mechanisms of the system itself, people are beginning to see just how corrupt it is. And so through these mechanisms, they are beginning to wake up to the fact that we have a problem and we really have to deal with it. So it's good in every way that all the things that we're seeing in the world are happening. In a way, it's good that Israel has decided to build these 3,000 housing units in the West Bank and that it's decided to withhold the tax money that it owes the Palestinian Authority for the last month, because it can be clearly seen by these actions that Israel is doing this in response to the UN resolution recognizing Palestine as a non-member state. And so therefore it's doing it in response to these people that it has been stomping its boot on for so long, being actually able to be recognized as people by the rest of the world. The government of Israel are not getting their own way, and so they are doing everything they can to escalate the situation. And people are beginning to see this now. Everybody's withdrawing their support, and it's the actions of the government of Israel that is causing the Israeli state to simply implode, as is its ultimate destiny. It has to fail because the current policies that it pursues can ultimately bring about no other result than the eventual collapse and implosion of the State of Israel. And it's the same with the system. We're seeing the system implode because the corruption within the system is being laid so bare. The corruption of our governments allowing such rampant pollution to take place in our countries in the name of progress. The huge battle we're facing here in Australia against coal seam gas mining. This is showing how corrupt the government is. It's showing how little regard the police have for the people of the country and how they simply side with corporations all the time because that's what they're told to do. It's showing the people how irrelevant they actually are when they stand against the corporate system. And yet it's reminding them that the corporate system was created by the people and that it's all supposed to be here to service our needs. And so people are beginning to question as to why they are all in such a state of hardship due to the actions of a system that was apparently created to service our needs. So again, we see an implosion of the system simply by its own actions. That's why ultimately we don't really have to do anything that much except spread empowerment amongst our friends. Let people know who and what they are. Let them know the power that they have so that when the system does implode, they will know what to do. They will know where to turn. They will already have a support group in place and they won't see it as a problem. Because ultimately, folks, it has to implode, and when it does, I mean, it's really not going to be a problem. In fact, it's going to be a moment when humanity actually becomes free. All we have to do is make sure we've got some sort of mechanism in place to contain the implosion so that it rumbles off along the direction we want it to take, namely a direction of responsibility, accountability, and a population that exists in a non-toxic environment. And eventually, as I said earlier, the system will simply dismantle itself simply by its ultimately unnecessary nature. And I think that now is the time that we're going to see this sort of thing coming about. Now is the time that the consciousness of humankind is actually waking up to the fact that we are responsible and that with a minimal of effort, we can actually do something about this situation. The answer's actually been there all along, folks. It's been right at our fingertips. It's simply been our choice as to whether to seize the opportunity or whether to not. But I think this is the time, folks. That's what I really do believe this whole 2012 date is about, if it is about anything at all. I think it is about seizing the moment. I think this is the time in history when the wave of enlightenment starts to reach critical mass and we start to see the beginning of an exponential curve. We start to see possibly even a branching of human consciousness, perhaps a splitting of reality. Now, there might be some people who will simply be so locked into this corporate reality and so locked into this corporate system that they really cannot see another way out. And there may be others who simply see the world for what it is, and they manifest that reality. If it is really an opportunity to manifest that which we believe to be real, then who knows what's possible? I mean, anything is possible. I mean, we say that there are only certain things that are possible, but really, when you understand how reality works, you see that possibility is only really limited by imagination. So whatever people really and truly with all their hearts believe they may be and believe they will achieve, then that is where they will be and that is what they will achieve. I really and truly believe that we're only really limited by our imagination, by what we believe is possible, what we perceive to be possible. But very often we base these beliefs on parameters that come from sources that are external to ourselves. We base these beliefs on what's been taught to us by an education system, by what our society has told us is acceptable, by what the media portrays as being the latest cool thing. We very often find all of these beliefs are not our own. If we really look deep enough within ourselves, that's what we find. Because if we really follow our hearts and we understand how reality works, we can find that anything is possible, my friends. The world could quite literally be anything we want it to be. It just depends on what the collective belief is. Now, this is a collective consciousness, so of course it's based on a collective belief. There may be a time coming, as many people have suggested, when these beliefs will split and alternate realities will be created. Who knows? Anything is possible. And I truly believe that. But whatever the outcome, I think this is one incredible time to be alive, and I'm certainly looking forward to see what eventuates on the planet over the next month and even the next year. I think out of all the times that I could have been born, this right now is the most incredible of all, and it's a great honor to be here participating in this moment with all the people out there who are doing it along with me. It's a hell of a ride, folks. It certainly is, and I must say that even with the bad times, I am enjoying every single moment of it. Well, look, we're getting very close to the end of the show here now, my friends. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for tuning in with this rather personal show. I've got to get myself back in the flow for weekly radio. It's been quite a while since I've done any. It's been actually since July that I've actually had to do any radio at all. But I'm looking forward to getting back into the flow of things and having some constructive shows over the next few months. I may be taking off again around February next year, early February or mid-January, to participate in the Full Circle project that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. As I said, there will be a website up dealing with that, which will be fullcirclenow.net. And I'm in the process of putting together a promo clip that I can put out there, which will give you a little bit of an idea of what the mission is going to be about. And so keep an eye out for that one. Thank you to all the people who responded so kindly to the 10 Days in Gaza clip that I put out a few days ago as well. If you haven't seen it yet, folks, you can go to YouTube. There's a clip. If you search for Max Egan and Ken O'Keefe, 10 Days in Gaza, you will see a 15-minute and 30-second clip that I put together, which I believe shows a bit more of a personal side of life in Palestine, life in Gaza. It's not so much of a story of hardship, more simply a story of humanity and a bit of a glimpse into daily life in the Gaza Strip. So please have a look at that if you get a chance, and I'd appreciate any feedback you can give me on it. I'd also appreciate that if it resonates with you, you could possibly share it with your friends. I think it's a good thing to show people in order for them to see that those in Palestine are simply ordinary people like everywhere else. It's not a country full of terrorists, folks. I mean, there are factions in there that may not agree with what's going on in Israel, but that doesn't make them terrorists. There are a lot of women and children in the Gaza Strip that really do need our attention. In fact, out of a population of 1.6 million, 1.2 million of them are women and children, and well over half the population in the Gaza Strip is children. And these people have no voice, folks. So it's up to we in the West who are aware of the real situation in Gaza to make a little bit of noise about it and to share the information that we have with our friends. But that is about it for me now, folks. I'm going to have to call the end of the show here. Thank you to anybody out there who has ever offered a donation or supported thecrowhouse.com. Thank you for spending your time with me today. I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take care until then. In Lakesh.